Hey, Twin Cities fans! Artaria String Quartet's first concert of their 2022-2023 season are coming up this weekend. We'll be performing selections from Dvorak Cypress's Debussy String Quartet, which you're hearing a small sample of now, and the Florence Price Piano Quintet in A minor with special guest pianist Gloriana Wolf, who happens to be our violist Annalie's daughter. Gloriana is currently an artistic certificate student at San Francisco Conservatory of Music under the tutelage of Sharon Mann, and has been such a joy to collaborate with this past week. Concerts are on Sunday, September 18th at 3 p.m. at Sunday Music Hall at Hamline University in St. Paul, and on Monday, September 19th at 7:30 p.m. at Antonello Hall at McPhail Center for Music in the heart of downtown Minneapolis. Also, for those folks in the La Crosse area, we'll be performing at the Capella Performing Arts Center on Friday, September 16th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available for purchase online at www.artariaquartet.com, and students are always free admission. We look forward to seeing you this weekend, and swing by afterward to say hi. Season 3 is officially here! Woohoo! Before we get started, this episode was recorded back in May, so all the Spitfire questions and content are from Season 2. Apologies for delaying the launch of this episode by a few months, and also apologies for those who listened to part one on the accidental air dates. But here it is. Let's welcome my friend and colleague, violinist Li Mei Lian. And welcome to Haydn Behind the Music Stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and with me is Li Mei Lian, who is a violinist and music theory professor at New England Conservatory, teaching in both the collegiate and preparatory divisions. She is also the Associate Concertmaster of Orchestra of Indian Hill and performs with East Coast Chamber Orchestra, and we'll be talking about indoor planting. Welcome, Li Mei. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Patty.
Yeah, I mean, immediately when I saw you on the Zoom, it was just so much fun to, like, I was like, oh my god, all the memories came back. And how much fun we had together at Norfolk Chamber Music Festival.
Mm-hmm. Putting up this... That was a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. It was 2015, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Wow. Cannot think about.
Yeah. So we both applied as individual participants at Norfolk Chamber Music Festival, which is associated with the Yale School of Music. It's their summer home, and they bring in some amazing, amazing chamber musicians and teachers. Most of them are Yale professors. Like, some of my fondest memories are Wei Yi Yang, the pianist.
Oh, it's true.
Making us jello shots and leaving them for
yes. Right, Wei.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also just working closely with the Emerson String Quartet and the Brentano String Quartet. I mean, just wonderful, wonderful humans.
Yeah.
And we also performed with Emmanuel Axe together, which was...
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Wow. You're bringing back lots of memories that I should remember. Yeah, that was... We played Schumann Piano Quintet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was that?
Yeah. That's right. So we just really bonded, I think, the two of us from our shared love for chamber music. And it's definitely like kind of kindred spirit in that way.
I mean, it was great, you know, because I never been to Tanglewood, and I remember that was a summer because we played with Maniacs and we had to go to Tanglewood to rehearse with him. And I know you went to Tanglewood before
True.
That, right?
Yeah.
So it was really nice to explore a new area that you knew very well. And then it was fun because, you know, we were in summer festival for weeks and it was like a getaway for a day.
Yeah, that's true.
We had ice cream. That I remember.
Yeah.
We had ice cream.
So it's just funny in the Berkshires because, yeah, of course, Norfolk is in Connecticut, but it's actually rather close to, I can't remember. It's like an hour away.
It's relatively close to, Western Mass. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
So, yeah, it's just funny how that region of the country during the summer is just so filled with classical music. And it's wonderful because all of our friends are in similar proximity and you can just go hop from one festival to the other.
If you have a car.
Yes, that's true.
We do
you can't really
that summer.
All right, Li Mei, can you share with me your most insane performance story?
Okay, are you ready for this?
I don't know.
It's insane in many ways. It's not just for the concert date. It was kind of a stretch. So this happened in 2018, I believe. I went to China for a month, the quartet I was in from school, and we had a 19 city tour in that month.
Okay. Wow.
So before I went on that tour, I went to Virginia with my husband now, Ken.
Hi, Ken. Yeah. Of the Parker Quartet. Then, yeah.
That's really name drop. Well, you know, I grew up in Taiwan, and Taiwan has lots of animals and different insects, all of that. Yeah. But you get mosquito bites in Taiwan, yes. But nothing else. But then when we went to Virginia, one day I was just walking outside and I got stung by a yellow jacket. Oh. And at the time, I had no idea that I got stung. I just thought this was such a weird pain, you know, and then got really bad. And it went away for 2 days, like after 2 days. I mean, it was really bad, but it went away. And that was a week before I had to go on China tour. So, you know, I didn't think so much about it. And so I just, you know, rehearsed and we went on the plane. And the first city we're going to go to require 40 hours of traveling. Okay. So I was like, okay, it's a big trip. So we boarded our first flight, and then the first flight was already delayed. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. And then we got to Atlanta and we were like running, you know, we literally had 5 minutes to make up to our flight. Mm-hmm. So we were running, and at the time we were running, I thought, you know, my leg felt a little weird.
Oh, were you stung on your leg? That was one of my...
Yeah. Okay. So I should have mentioned that.
Okay.
So I was feeling a little weird, but we were running really hard to catch the plane. So we caught the plane, got on the plane, and I sat down and I was like, okay, let me check out my leg. And I looked at my leg, and my leg had already tripled.
Inside. Oh! Okay.
And then I was on the plane. Uh-huh. That was going to be 15 hours to Korea before we take another transfer flight to China. Luckily, I packed some Benadryl with me. I had 2 Benadryl with me, carry on, but the rest is in my check bag. So I thought, okay, maybe we'll be fine. So I took some Benadryl, but my leg was like really triple the size, and it was terrible. Like the flight attendants, everybody was looking at me and they say, well, what should you do? And so they actually cleared the whole aisle for me to put my leg up and with some like ice packs.
Yeah.
Anyway, fast forward, we got to Korea. It was terrible. And then we had learned in Korea that our bags didn't come with us because, you know, the transfer was so short.
Uh-huh.
It was okay, great. Then we found out that the flight we're taking from Korea to the first city in China, they only have that flight every other day. Uh-huh. So that means our bags will not get there until our performance is over.
Oh my gosh.
And then all my medicine is in that bag.
Yeah.
Nothing we can do. Like literally it's my quartet, 3 other people with me who at that moment could not even walk anymore. Yeah. You know? Got to the hotel with no bags after 40 hours. My leg like that. We had to buy concert clothes, right?
Uh-huh.
But I was the only Chinese speaker in the group. Uh-huh. So I had to go out with that leg.
I see.
So
you can't online shop. Everybody... There's no, okay. No delivery service.
No delivery. So literally it was my cellist basically carrying me on his back.
Oh, wow.
Going out to shop for concert clothes.
The image.
I mean, you may know the cellist. I don't know. Joey
Joey.
Yeah. Joey has some family members that are doctors. Mm-hmm. And then they were really concerned about my leg. They said, you know, maybe it's an infection. Because it was so bad by that point that I don't want to get into the details. Because it's not the most like nice
visual
image to think about. Yeah.
You didn't want to go to a hospital?
So we went.
Oh, okay.
Because we had to. Yeah. And then Joey was like, well, basically, if we don't go and if this is infection, that's not even talk about tour.
Yeah.
Like you... You may not even survive.
Right.
So we went to the hospital, which, you know, I didn't know the city as well because I had never been to that city by that point. So it was just mid of nowhere. Anyway, fast forward, we did everything. Very scary. Joey carried me everywhere. Hot weather. It was during summer. There was no infection. It was
okay, good.
But then when we went out for concert clothes shopping, because of my leg, I literally had no energy to try on anything. I just told him to buy me anything black.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then I could not even wear any shoes because like the whole swollen part was from my knee down to ankle down to my whole foot. I think that being on the plane for 40 hours didn't help as well. So I couldn't also wear any shoes. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't buy shoes. And then I was wearing my travel shoes and I told my quartet, I was like, that's the best you're gonna get. I'm gonna go on stage with that shoes. And they say, maybe not. Maybe just go out barefoot.
Yeah.
It's better than.
Do it like.
So that's.
Yeah.
So we went to the dress rehearsal. The doctor at the hospital told me that there's literally nothing they can do because there was not infection.
Yeah.
And he's like, the only thing you can do is do not walk. And always put your leg high up.
Okay,
elevate. So that the blood. So then in dress rehearsal, they had an extra chair for me.
Yeah.
So the whole time dress rehearsal. This was the first city, right? The presenter was so excited, taking all the photos. So then in all the photos, it was me with my leg up in the chair while playing the violin. It looks really terrible.
Oh my god. At least you could do that. Like, as a cellist, that would be so much more difficult, you know?
That's true. You gotta be really flexible, like yoga master or whatever. Yeah, so then we played the whole concert. But I mean, we all looked kind of terrible because nobody's dress arrived.
Yeah.
And then I believe the 2 gentlemen in the group actually also walked away block socks and then me barefoot.
Yeah.
I gave a speech. I said, well, we got here, but our backs are still somewhere. We don't even know where they are. Yeah. And I got stung by Yellow Jacket.
Yeah.
And then literally play the concert. Like, they wrapped my whole foot and leg with, like, all this bandage tightly.
Yeah.
After the concert, I walked out and I was walking with, like, that super tightly wrapped leg. Mm-hmm. And then this little girl who came to the concert was waiting for us backstage. And I walked out and she was like, oh, I didn't realize you are disabled.
Oh, no.
And then I was like, I'm not.
Temporarily.
Yeah. And then she got so scared because I guess she saw the leg with the bandage. She was really, really little. Yeah. And she ran away.
Oh, no. You're scaring young children now with your leg.
And I thought, okay, this is all you're gonna get. And then actually for the whole week, like the first 5 concerts, we played with my leg. Like,
yeah.
We eventually found like shoes that's super, super elastic and then just kind of
slide on. Yeah.
Yep. But every dress she has on my leg was like up on the chair.
Oh my gosh. Wait, did you just say how long that lasted?
Yeah, like lasted for more than a week. And I was taking antibiotics every single day.
Wow.
Like a lot of it. Because I was really scared I was going to get infection. So apparently, like, later on, I was sharing this story with my family. Family friends were also doctor. And then they were telling me that it's kind of weird. Because usually people would have delayed reaction like this. But not this delayed.
Oh.
Like I was really fine after the first 2 days of, you know, the pain and swellingness. Mm-hmm. But then they say, yeah, having the 1 week delay reaction, it's really rare.
Okay.
But then they also say, apparently, it happened to a lot of Taiwanese people.
Oh.
Particularly if you get stung by Yellow Jacket.
Weird.
Yellow Jacket or... Yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
Ever since then, I always pack lots of Benadryl with me on the road. I remember thinking back this story, just how I felt so hopeless, you know, when I got to the hotel. I had nothing with me.
Yeah.
My bag didn't come. I wasn't sure if it was infection and we were going to go to hospital the next morning. I didn't know anybody in that area. Mm-hmm. I mean, I speak Mandarin, but you know, different region in China, they have their own language and accent. So I felt so lost and I felt so hopeless.
Yeah.
I really thought, you know, if it was infection, then maybe I only have 2 days left.
Oh my god. I totally understand that though. Like, we've all been in that feeling of hopelessness, but I'm glad that that you were surrounded, that you had other people, you know, that you were traveling with the others and that it was fine. I'm glad that you're fine. Yeah. All right, Limay, are you ready for some Spitfire questions?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Mahler or Bruckner?
Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel? Panic.
Debussy.
Okay. Cats or dogs?
Dogs. This is so hard for me. I'm the most indecisive person you would know. Okay.
Appetizer or dessert?
Appetizer.
Oh, wow. That was very quick.
That was
okay.
Easy.
Is it because you're like too hungry at the beginning? You just want to eat something?
No, I love sweets, but I need to be in the mood for
Got you. Okay.
Yeah.
Sparkling or still water?
Sparkling. I think that's the correct answer, knowing you.
Me?
Yeah, you like sparkling
water,
right?
I do, but this is not my... You're not asking me the question.
Well, no, I think you got me to drink sparkling water a lot more than I used
to. Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's such a
I drink a lot of sparkling water. Yeah, I have the machine.
Oh, really? Yeah, same.
Yeah. You see?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. Fan favorite question, alternate universe musical instrument.
Oh my God, that was really fast.
Like, if you didn't play violin, what else would you want to play?
I was gonna say viola, but then there's too similar.
Oh, what you're saying? But I mean, okay, that's a viola joke in that, like, no, most people wouldn't say viola, so.
No, I love viola. Well, I also play the piano, so I also don't know if that counts.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Because okay. Then, I don't know.
Not the cello, I guess?
No, I don't think I can play cello well. I may be a conductor.
Oh, okay.
Actually, that's something I want to
do. Sure.
Does that count?
Sure, I'll count that. I'll count that.
Thank you.
Okay, we can move forward. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Okay. Pandemic guilty pleasure?
None. Okay. Drink wine.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I drank a lot of wine. Yeah. It's very scary. I bought wine from this wine shop during the whole pandemic. And then after the pandemic, I mean, we're still technically in pandemic, but after 2 years, I realized there's like the history part that you can see all the odors.
Oh, no. Yeah. don't look back, people. Don't look back during that time. You don't want to know.
I was like, wow. I was such a good customer.
Yeah, exactly. They definitely appreciated your business, I'm sure.
Yep. They're very nice people. Yeah. And I love the shop.
Okay, so, good, yeah. Good. Favorite professor shout out?
Well, definitely both of my violin teachers, Nicholas Kitchen and Don Wallerstein. But academic speaking, definitely Stratis Minakakis. He's a theorist and composer at NEC. Mm-hmm. He was my doctoral thesis advisor, and he really changed, you know, my view of music. He's specialized in post-tonal world of music, mm-hmm. to Ligeti and Xenakis, mm-hmm. and really helped me understand to connect music with other fields, mm-hmm. and then why that's important. And I think that really shaped the way I teach these days. Mm-hmm. Trying to find links to other fields and things we see every day in life to music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now he's my colleague, so I'm very lucky.
Yeah, isn't that fun though? Like, yeah, it's mm-hmm. just, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Most inspired musical hero of any genre?
This one is really hard. There are too many in different mm-hmm. ways. I feel like if you want to get an answer from me for this one, it's going to take 20 minutes, so maybe we should go on. Like, really? I told you, this is really hard for me, this kind of thing.
Okay.
Maybe we'll come back to it. Okay. Idea.
Most transformative performance experience?
I played 2 concerts, different timeline, but I worked with dance company, mm-hmm. once with Boston Ballet and once with the other well-known dance company. That really changed my way of thinking about pulse and then, you know, how we think about phrasing and breathing, all of that. Mm. And I still remember working with them and talking about the tempo and all of the way to show with your body, how to give them cues and all of that. The first concert I did was with the conductor, and the second one was the chamber setting. Mm-hmm. So we really had to be the conductor. Mm-hmm. And for me, also to see how they, you know, was a more modern take on music, like Mendelssohn Octet. Mm-hmm. That's the piece we did. Cool. And I think for me, that counts.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think I think we can learn a lot from other disciplines of arts. And mm-hmm. I know that in classical music, oftentimes we do just focus in on our details because there's so many details. Mm-hmm. But when you expand your focus away from that, you can really learn a lot from other mediums. Mm-hmm. I almost wish that there was more of a push in school to go to attend dance concerts or theater or something else, but mm-hmm. rather than always just going to classical music concerts. I mean, just to get that broadened perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think there are more concerts these days that they're trying to do the stage line, some visual image of music or connection. Mm-hmm. I think that's quite nice as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think working with dancers is something I would love to explore more.
Yeah. They're great. No, totally.
Well, some they remind you that it's not about playing your notes fast or even faster.
Yeah, exactly. So there's choreography literally between them and the musician. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that so, is. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Desert island piece of any genre?
Oh my God. Your questions are so difficult.
Thought provoking, I'd like to think.
Jazz?
Okay, just in general? You just want, like, a jazz band on your island?
Yeah, because I find that I can think about all other genres from jazz, and then that's something I would like if I can only have one.
Okay.
And that's also something I've been wanting to learn more about, so it will not just be completely something that I already feel comfortable with.
Sure.
Well, assuming I'm gonna be stuck on that for a while, on the island.
Yeah. Like you can learn.
You see, that's why this question is really hard for me. I'm always thinking too much. Yeah. So it's like, I want to pick this, but then I may have this problem.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, that's funny. I mean, do you have a favorite jazz person?
I cannot say it's my favorite. It's kind of like a new genre for me to listen to. But of course, I listen to like John Coltrane mm-hmm. and all those people. But yeah, I really like John Coltrane's albums. Yeah. Like that's kind of what I have downloaded on Spotify. Mm-hmm. But,
okay, yeah. So a John Coltrane tribute jazz band.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, well, Lime, you finished the Spitfire questions. Congratulations.
Oh my God. Yeah, thank God.
Thank God.
I'm always very, okay, this is very funny, but you know, recently my friend told me to take this personality test. Huh. I forgot what it was called, but it was like this famous
Myers-Briggs or something?
Yeah. She was like, yeah, just take the test. I was like, okay. This person was my housemate on a tour. And then so around 30 minutes later, she's like, so what are you? I was like, I'm not done with the test yet. She's like, you're not done. She's like, what? But she was trying to be really kind and encouraging. She's like, take your time. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay. So I kept going. I was like, this question is so hard. She's like, well, just take your time, but really think about it. But also don't take too much time. And then 50 minutes later, she was asking me like, what was your type? I was like, well, I'm almost I remember there was a question that asks you, like, do you make new friends frequently or mm-hmm. easily? Something like mm-hmm. that. And I thought I was, but maybe I'm not. And I actually had to call Ken to ask him. Say, Ken, do you think I make new friends easily? He's like, yeah. I'm like, are you sure? I don't think so. And he actually had to give me like a few examples to convince me that the answer to that question should be yes. That is for one question.
But it's also like, well, how deep of a friendship is it? Or is it just acquaintance?
Yeah,
that's so funny. Oh my gosh, I feel like very similar in that, but I might be a little bit quicker.
I will hope so. Well, there was definitely one question I answered really quickly. It was a question I asked if you're indecisive.
Oh, right.
Like, and I was like, yes, I definitely am very indecisive. For this, I'm decisive.
Yeah, exactly. The irony of it all. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Bravo.
Oh, thank you.
Encore.
Encore.
Encore. No, I'm kidding. Do I feel like it's getting shorter and shorter?
Because I don't want to keep playing this. That's why.
I see.
Okay, Lime, can you walk me through your musical origin story? How did you discover music, the violin, and piano? When did you decide to take it professionally, and all the steps to where you are today?
So nobody from my direct family is musician. My mom just loves music and she listens to classical music a lot. So my mom is a great person, but she's kind of lazy. She really doesn't want to come to each one of our bedroom. I have two brothers. Mm. She didn't want to come to all three bedrooms to wake us up. So she would just play classical music really loudly from the living room. And then thinking that you're going to wake up. And she will always start with Beethoven's Violin Sonata. It's always Clara Haskell's and Grunier's recording. So that's something she will play, and then she will go on to play Anne Sophie Mutter's Mozart Concerto.
Oh, okay.
You know, all those classic recordings. So that's sort of my first encounter with classical music growing up. And then when I went to kindergarten, one of my best friends in kindergarten, one day she brought the violin to school and she told everybody that she was taking violin lessons and she wanted to perform for everybody. And then she suddenly, from my point of view, she suddenly became like the most popular person in the whole class. And you know, me, I guess I am competitive, but back then, like, it was immediate. My mom told me, like, I came home and I told her, I said, I'm no longer the most popular person in school because I don't play the violin.
You thought you were the most popular? Were you? I mean, I don't know.
According to my mom, I...
See, so you can make friends really quickly.
I guess. I don't know. I just think I'm very bossy, you know? I make sure that everybody knows me from day one of school. I mean, maybe now I don't do that, but I remember when I was a kid, I would go first day of school and I would go to every single person. I say, hi, I'm leaving.
Oh, what's your name? Though.
And we can be friends if you're scared. You know?
See, look,
But, you know, at the time, my oldest brother, who's 5 years older than me, he was already starting to take violin lessons. Mm-hmm. And so my mom said I was very serious when I came home that day. And when I told her that I was no longer the most popular person, and I said, I must request that you take me to violin lessons because I need to be the most popular person. Therefore, I must learn the violin.
Yeah.
And by that time, I had learned the piano for half a year. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you have piano. And I said, that's not enough. Everybody plays the piano. I need to play the violin.
Also, I can't bring a piano into my classroom to show people that I can play piano.
You're right. Yeah, so that's literally how it started.
Okay.
You know, my mom said, okay, you asked for it. So,
here you are.
Yeah, also, you know, she's really like me. Like, people who know me, I'm efficient, but I'm also lazy. Like, I always think I'm efficient because I'm lazy. Mm-hmm. That was my mom. So she thought she was already taking my brother to violin lessons. She may as well take me.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You know, she's like, it's not much a trouble, you know. So that's how I started, and I was 5. Mm-hmm. Then it just all sort of happened. Like, my mom, my family never thought that I was going to go into it professionally. I didn't think about it. I really didn't practice so much. My mom was always busy with 3 kids. She would always say that, you know, if you want it, you got to practice. I'm not gonna ask you to practice. It was around 3rd grade. My violin teacher at the time suggested my mom to bring me to audition for the government-funded program. Mm-hmm. So we did that, and so I could study violin and all the music theory or history classes.
Just to clarify, this is all in Taiwan.
Yeah, it's
just
all in Taiwan.
Okay.
So my mom did that. She thought, you know, I may as well try, and I got in. So I just sort of followed the system all the way, and then auditioned for middle school. In Taiwan, you have to take auditions for elementary school, middle school, high school for both academic actually. music and also for your playing, mm-hmm. for performance and also ear training, all of that. Yeah. Very serious yeah. program. Everybody must play the
piano. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. Like, so privatized in America. And even if you elect into it, like, it's not even that formalized. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really a great program. And the government will fund your education as well. And I think that was a great part, because it's not easy for a regular family to be able to support their kids to go into music like that.
Right.
So my mom would always get phone calls from my violin teacher or piano teacher saying that, oh, could you please ask Limit to pay more attention to all of this kind of thing? She's so like, la, 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 la. But somehow every time when I have an audition, I will practice really hard and I'll get by. Yeah. I will pass and I will do pretty okay. And that's why I could get into all these schools. Mm. But I was probably a terrible student. So by the time I had to audition for high school, my mom, one day she just came to, she was like, Limit, we need to talk.
Uh-oh.
And she'd say, you gotta decide right now. You wanna do music or you don't wanna do music?
Oh my God.
If you wanna do music, you have to practice. I'm not going to ask you to practice. It's not my job. Mm. And if you don't, you also should just study now and decide what you may wanna do in the future.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was sounds really stressful, right? But I mean, you know me. I'm very chill most of the time.
Yeah.
So I thought at the moment she asked me, I was like, okay, it's very easy. I'll just stick with music and from tomorrow I'll practice.
Oh, wow.
And that was
so
that.
So you say you're very indecisive, but then that was a very cool So it's just like you're indecisive about things that don't matter as much.
I don't know. You know, I think I was always a very decisive person. I don't know from which point of my life I became like...
Okay. Okay, but earlier on, you were just way more decisive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did you decide music? Why did you say, oh, it's very easy?
Because I don't remember everything happened back then, but I did remember when she asked me that question. I just thought it's impossible for me to live without music.
Yeah.
So it's very easy. And I told her, I was like, I think there's competitive side inside me and I would love to do this really well. And I've been doing this for years and I cannot imagine myself just
like giving it up.
Not even trying.
Yeah, I get that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then actually at that time, I was also asked to decide whether I want to do violin or piano. Because violin was always my major. But then I loved piano a lot more in middle school. So I practiced piano so much every day. So much until my parents actually bought me a grand piano.
Oh, wow.
They put it in my very tiny bedroom. Mm. My bedroom in Taiwan is very small. It's like a twin size bed. Mm. And the grand piano was literally right next to my bed.
Yeah. So you can just roll over and just start practicing.
Exactly. Just like lie on the bed and
play. Yeah.
Yeah. But according to my parents, I was practicing piano like 4 hours a day.
Wow.
Yeah. And violin probably like 1 hour a day. It's a disproportion. Yeah. Then she asked me, I had to make a decision. And I told her, I say, I love piano, but if I were to pick the music for piano and violin, I love violin music a lot.
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, I actually listen to piano music more now, which is really interesting.
Uh-huh. Do you still play piano?
Yeah, I still play. Okay. I mean, not as well as back then. I played really well back then, not thinking about it. It's kind of sad that I stopped practicing.
But you kind of have. I mean, it's very rare for people to keep up to instruments in the city.
But I missed the, you know, at one point in my life when I first came to Boston, I was able to sight read everything on the piano just like that. I read through the whole Beethoven sonata for violin
on
piano with my friend.
Yeah.
I was able to come up with like a simplified version on the piano as I play. And now because I'm not as familiar with the keyboard it's hard to do.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But now thinking back, part of it maybe because I love piano music so much, so much that I feel like I couldn't be a pianist. Because I could never get to where I would want
like
to
the
be.
Level that you I understand.
Like also maybe I felt like was harder for me. Like sometimes you just feel more natural with an instrument than the other. And I felt piano was natural for me up to a certain point. But if I had to put in the work to really make, you know, the articulation of that happen, it would not be something I could
I understand. So, piano is also just such a difficult instrument too. And it's also highly competitive the job opportunities are somewhat limited.
And then I love chamber music. I love playing with people. Yeah. So I felt violin in some ways easier. There's orchestra and there's chamber music. And orchestra music is so great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but according to my mom, when I made the decision, starting from the next day, I was practicing violin 4 or 5 hours a day.
Yeah, wow.
And she was like, great.
That was easy. Yeah. Ultimatum, and then everything's fine.
Yeah, and then she told me, she thought, why didn't I do that earlier? and then I became very serious. Like when I made that decision, I knew this would be the path for me. And then growing up in Taiwan, the system I grew up in, you had to practice, you had to learn all the theory and history, all of that, and school studying. But at the same time, there was also very high demand and requirement for the standard for your other academic performance. Mm-hmm. So every day at school was 8 to 9 hours for me. And I had to study everything, you know, a lot. And also I took the entrance exam for college, the national entrance exam. So when I was deciding for college, I told my parents, I said, I would love to go to a conservatory. Mm-hmm. You know, going to university was a nice idea, but I told them I really would love to be in an environment where music was my only focus. Mm-hmm. And that's why I came to NEC and just... Now, oftentimes, you know, Ken and I will have to give people suggestions for college. Yeah. And then they talk to both of us and they get very different point of view because today's not about him.
Yeah. But,
you know, he's more like his whole childhood was so music centered that he thought for his college education, it would not be great to just have music. Mm-hmm. Like he would love to explore other things. Mm-hmm. So he did like a dual program, like what NEC and Harvard have. Yeah. So he also did something like that. His advice to people is always that explore and you can always narrow down your path later. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was that I did so much growing up that I felt like I didn't need other thing. I just needed music. Yeah. But it's fair. It's hard to be in that situation. So you really have to decide based on your background.
Exactly. I was going to say, to me, it's really just how what you were brought up with.
Yeah. It seemed very natural for me to just decide on this path. And I guess it was harder. Actually, the hard part was to decide what I really wanted to do with music.
Yeah.
Like whether to be a chamber musician, orchestral musician, or be a teacher. But around my master degree, I knew that I always want to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Then I had that clear path that I needed to do a doctorate degree and I really wanted to study more. Mm-hmm. But being a theory teacher was not something I thought that I would be one day. It just sort of naturally happened.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit like what we do in our chamber group, you know, we did so much score studying, we talk about harmony, and it's just something that I had always been very interested in. Then I realized, you know, maybe all you need to do is to know how to change the way you address certain things in the score, and then it becomes just theory center music instead of performance center music.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, to me, music theory is the script in like a play or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like reading poetry. It's like trying to figure out the nuances between the black and white on the page, you know? And I think that's probably where we connected, was that we both really cared about that specifics and the implications that it could create when you do take that time to really invest and really study something well. Yeah. What's fun too is that you can find multiple possibilities and you can discover multiple possibilities in multiple performances. Like we did multiple performances of the Schumann and they were never the same because it's not like there's one way only because of the theory.
Exactly.
But anyway, that's my nerdiness coming out. But
No, it's definitely true. I always, you know, I have every year I teach different students at NEC. And then, you know, sometimes I see that they get a little bit
drowsy
in class. Drowsy is the better word, I guess. Yeah. And then I will just sort of remind them. I say, you know, it's actually totally okay if you find this sort of topic sometimes a little bit hard or confusing. It's like learning math. It's like learning a language, you know. It's really the language that we're trying to learn. And when you try to learn a new language in the beginning, a lot of it, it's something so fundamental that it's not fun,
right?
It's just like memorizing the letters, memorizing the spelling,
the interval,
memorizing the grammar, you know. And sometimes I run into people who are like around our generation and they say, oh, I didn't like my theory classes, I found them not so useful. And I don't blame them, because oftentimes the theory classes are taught by very different people. Like they're composers, they're people who are into electronic music, people who are like me or like you, performers, you know. And everybody's approach of teaching theory is so different, and it's really hard to find a teacher who views the theory the same way as you or apply theory to their everyday life the same way as you. I cannot say I enjoy every single class that I took at school, you know, and it's about finding what works for you.
Right.
It's a difficult thing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Even with chamber music, I'm sure, like, you just asked me Debussy or Ravel.
Yeah.
You know, like, learning Debussy Quartet and Ravel Quartet. You know, I cannot say the whole process was the same experience beginning to the end.
Right.
Sometimes it's all about, like, tuning, right? Okay, let's tune this chord. I mean, I cannot say I enjoy every single moment tuning.
No.
I mean, I know it's necessary, but it's like, Patty, can you just play that note?
Drone. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Do you want to talk about any like performing that you do?
Well, I mean, for me, my life is 95% teaching.
So. Oh, okay.
You probably teach a lot too.
Not as much as you. Yeah.
I'm a little insane. I love my students. But at NEC, I have usually four classes, like four sessions. Each session is 3 hours a week, like three times a week, 1 hour each time. So it's 12 hours a week. And I also have 17 ballet students on top of that. Mm-hmm. So every week is around 30 hours of teaching.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then it's really hard to actually travel or rehearse with people. Yeah. The only type of rehearsal time that works for me is in the evening. Uh-huh. So I've learned that you have to sacrifice something. Mm. And I love teaching, you know. I never, like for me, I will always choose teaching over performing if I have to make a choice. Okay. But I also don't love traveling so much. Mm-hmm. I think that's...
Well, with the bee story, then yeah, I can understand.
I don't know why I didn't think about this, but you know, being a musician, if you want to perform, then obviously traveling is a big part of it. But I don't know why I never thought of
it. No one talks about it. That's a really good point. Yeah. No one talks about how your lifestyle is when you decide to become a performing musician. And when you're successful at it. Even if you're in a big orchestra, the orchestra tours too, you know?
Yeah.
So no one says anything or talks about how that might actually impact your life 20 years down when you make this big decision at age like 16 or whatever, you know, or
earlier. I always wanted to play like, you know, in an orchestra, and of course every single orchestra has different schedule, but then I learned that most of the time the concert is in the evening. That means that's when you work.
Exactly.
And I always want to have children at some point in my life, and I thought if I cannot have dinner with my kids most of the nights during the week, then I don't think I will be happy.
Right.
But somehow that's a very easy thing to think about, but at the same time, like you say, nobody talks about it in school. Yeah, you're so focused on achieving your goal that you don't even think about what actually comes with it once you get it.
That's exactly right. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what the best, I mean, I'm not trying to blame anybody for not telling me or, you know, trying to warn me about it because they didn't know where I was going either. But I guess maybe on this podcast, like if anyone's listening, just to make sure that maybe hearing our, like even past guest stories about what their life is like, or maybe I should just have an episode on touring or like what it's like to, you know,
yeah, I think that will be helpful. And I know that every chamber group also has different schedule based on what their preference is. Some people prefer to be on the road fewer times during the year, but every time they're longer. Mm-hmm. Some people prefer to be doing short trips each time, and they can do it more frequently, things like that.
Right.
So just all the possibilities, you know, of that. And then all the orchestra schedule is different too.
Exactly. Yeah. But you still perform. Yeah. I mean, you still perform with the Orchestra of Indian Hill, which apparently the name's going to change potentially soon.
Yeah, I mean, that's the orchestra I've been playing with since 2013 when I was a master's
almost
student.
Almost 10 years.
It was the first ever orchestra audition I took.
Oh, wow.
Sort of professional orchestra. Yeah, I took the audition. I thought I played really well, and I actually auditioned for sectional player, and when they offered me the position, they say, well, actually, our associate concertmaster is leaving after the first concert, so, and then we would love to hire you for that position.
Perfect.
So, you know, it's been great. I love the concertmaster of the orchestra. Mm-hmm. I love the conductor of the orchestra. He's the conductor at Boston Conservatory. Mm-hmm. I think that's partially the reason why I'm still playing with this orchestra. Yeah. I don't really play with a lot of different ensembles, like, you know, because of my teaching schedule, but this is the orchestra that I love so much. I love the people, you know, a lot of the people. There's just like a nice community, and playing with Bruce Hanger is the conductor. Mm-hmm. It's just so nice. Yeah. And then I miss like Brahms Symphony, playing Brahms Symphony, Mahler Symphony, things like that.
Yeah.
So,
But then you do get your chamber music fix with the East Coast Chamber Orchestra, or ECHO for short, for those who know it. Yeah. So you get little play with, here and there.
Yeah, I get a little bit. I play in big orchestra, I play in conductorless orchestra, and I play in chamber groups.
Yeah.
I get all the
things. Yeah, so you're living the dream. Yeah, you can have it all. Just you have to figure out the proportions of that. Maybe that's...
And I will say that the good thing about this, I mean, I really enjoy all the concerts I do, because when I do play, then I play with people I love and I care, and people who I enjoy playing with.
Yeah.
And oftentimes I'm very bossy, so I make sure I get to play whatever I want to play.
Well, because I don't have time to play. I gotta teach. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. Well, sometimes. I try not to pull that card because everybody's so busy in different ways. But I try to be persuasive. I really want to play this piece. Do you think we can play it? And then if the person say no, I will ask so many times about the reason why we cannot play it.
To wear them down. That's funny. Well, Lime, I'll play anything with you anytime.
Oh, okay. That's...
So here's the list.
What's the hardest thing for
you? Yeah, exactly. Okay, are you ready to take a break?
Yeah, I can take a break.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's so funny. In the last few days, I play with different people, and everybody asked me, do you want to take a break? And I would say, no, I don't need a break. Why do we need a break? And then I realized that people need break. Like, whoa. So, Patty, would you like to take a break?
Oh, sure. That would be great. Okay. So considerate.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break.
Okay, we'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. So you wanted to talk about indoor planting. You said you kind of started this during the pandemic.
Yes. And there was no plant in the apartment until pandemic.
Okay. You needed to bring the outdoors indoors, in other words, because you couldn't go outdoors. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I was just making a joke about you wanting to bring the outdoors indoors, but was that really the reason?
Sort of, yeah. I really needed to be surrounded by plants. You know, I used to, I still do, but I did more back then. Mm-hmm. I would take walks every day and I would look at the trees around my home. Mm-hmm. And then seeing how they change or transform every day really was something important for me. Mm-hmm. So when the pandemic hit, you know, in the beginning, we were all so cautious about what's happening. Mm-hmm. And we would go out every day for a walk, but like 20 minutes max with mask, all of that.
Yeah.
So I decided to start planting. I guess a lot of musicians and a lot of people started doing that too. Yeah. So you have been to my home, but you know, the living room is basically by the windowsill, all filled with plants.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are lots of succulents and, you know, all those indoor plants. But something I did a little crazily during the pandemic was that I started planting food.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so tell me, yeah, because I mean, were they just herbs or was it like actual vegetables?
Yeah, so started with herbs, obviously, because that was the one that's
easy to do.
Good for indoor, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then it became a little bit more adventurous.
Okay.
And then it became like a science project.
Okay.
Like, you know, during the pandemic, I will wake up every day around 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And then according to Ken, I would talk to my plants for around an hour.
Okay. What do you say to them?
Literally, they're my kids.
Aw.
Like, I think he might have someone video recordings. Like, you know, he thought it was too ridiculous. But
yeah.
Apparently, I will talk to shiso plant. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the Japanese shiso. It's like perilla leaf. Mm-hmm. And I will talk to the shiso and I'm like, shiso. You're good. You grew a little bit. Do you need some water? I think you need some water. Oh, but let me feel the soil. Oh, maybe you don't need water. Why, is it too much water? And it will just meet back and forth, like adding more potting mix. Like, oh, maybe it's too much. I'm taking some out. And then I had so many and I named them too.
Oh, wow.
So I had an edamame plant, just also a little crazy because nobody grows soybeans indoors.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how does that work?
I got 3 edamame.
You got 3? Wow. That's actually impressive.
Yeah.
Did you eat them?
I mean, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They were delicious, but you know, like when you order edamame at a restaurant, you don't just get 3.
No. You get 30. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so funny. I got 3 and I blanched them like with care. And then when we ate it, it was like as if we were eating an edamame that cost $1,000.
Well, it probably costs that much in time. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just very nice. I guess for me, the planting part was more like seeing the plants grow every day. And then seeing how they respond to the sunlight and the weather and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I had outside the herbs, I had edamame, which actually had 2 cycles of life. So I got edamame and I left 1 edamame on the plant to let it dry out and become soybean, like the soybean we see.
Yeah.
I didn't know that edamame just become soybean
once
it's dried. I mean, it makes sense, but I never thought of it. So they're like, if you want to get soybean, you just leave it on the plant until the whole plant dies and it turns brown and yellow.
Oh.
And then the edamame becomes soybean in the pot.
Oh.
So
I didn't realize
happened.
The whole plant died, though.
Yeah. Oh. Like it only has a
like, birth cycle. Whatever it's
called. I forgot the name, but it's just 1 year and the next year it comes back.
Oh,
like, it grows super quickly. In the morning, I'll wake up and then by the time I go to bed, it will grow like 2 inches.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you're inspired. I should plant edamame. Can I like...
You won't get many edamame, but they're really, really nice to look at.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's the thought of like growing edamame. Yeah. I mean, you probably need a lot more soil or like a bigger... You need a lot of land. I mean, when people grow soybean, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Except, you know, our apartment has limited space. So that was also another thing. I tried to not let my plants grow as much as they could.
Yeah.
It's really not humane to think about this, but I will purposely plant them in a smaller pot.
Yeah.
And be like, I'm so sorry, you just cannot grow as much as you want.
But I know I'm tangenting. I know that this isn't necessarily the principle of bonsai, but it's almost like you're doing bonsai with these plants.
Yeah, I thought about actually doing bonsai.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but then I stopped myself because I thought if I really started that, I will become a crazier person. was really going insane according to Ken. Yeah. According to, no, Ken, like, yeah. What I was doing with my plants.
But I don't know. I mean, there is something a little bit romantic about bonsai in that you're really taking mm-hmm. care of this really, you know, because it's really delicate and it does take a lot of attention.
Yeah, a lot of attention, lots of thinking and planning.
Yeah.
And then how they may grow. And then it's also lots of things to do with the natural shape that the bonsai is going to grow into.
Yeah.
And then there is certain level of control mm-hmm. you can put into bonsai.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, it's all about the natural beauty, right?
Right.
So I had edamame and then that soybean that I got yeah. from the dying mm. plant. Mm. I just thought, oh, you know, what can I do with one soybean? So I like put in the soil mm. and then there was nothing for 2 weeks. And I thought, oh, maybe it's not going to happen. And just suddenly one morning, I saw this little sprout.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in 2 weeks, it completely grew into a plant again.
Oh my like gosh.
A mature plant. And I got edamame again. I got 5 edamame.
5? Okay. So why did you only do it twice though? You didn't want to keep planting edamame?
Oh, by the time the pandemic seemed to almost be done. So
I
thought maybe it's time to
stop this hobby.
Well, it's not to stop because I really felt bad for the edamame plant too. You know, I was suffering the plant.
I see.
It wanted to grow, but I obviously was doing like, it for just...
Yeah.
Well, so I had that and I also had... We were just talking about this the other day with a friend of us who saw our plants. He's like, well, you have so many plants. And they ask like, who takes care of all the plants? And then we say, it's me. Mm. And I say, well, yeah, actually, during the pandemic, I bought all these plants. And one day we went into one of the farm stands to get more plants, like for food. Mm. I told Ken, I say, you know, you should pick one because you are in this with me. You should just pick whatever you want and then we'll plant it together. Mm-hmm. And he liked the idea. So he just saw it says mini tomato. Mm. So he just took it. But you know, tomato plants could be they grow
yeah like. That's a big plant it can be yeah
yeah so he happened to pick the sango tomato which grows crazily.
Oh no.
At one point that tomato plant reached our ceiling.
Whoa. Holy yeah. cow.
We actually had lots of tomatoes.
Okay.
And our apartment gets lots of sun during the whole day.
So it's like a greenhouse effect almost even.
Yeah. And then we will move like the tomato plant in the morning like, from this window to the other window in the afternoon to get the maximum exposure to sun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then I was teaching at the time, and then depending on the plant's location, I also have to move my station. It was really intense. Yeah, so we had that sango tomato. And I don't know if you have ever had a tomato plant, but you know, for whoever is listening, you know,
yeah.
if you have a tomato plant, you know, it's really easy to propagate tomato plants. Mm-hmm. They have this main stem mm-hmm. and then they have leaves. And between the stem and the leaves, there's this thing called the sucker.
Yeah.
And if you snip off the sucker and plant it in soil or water or root in water, mm-hmm. they becomes another plant.
Oh.
Easily.
Uh-huh.
So at one point we have like 4 sango tomato plants.
In your apartment. So yeah.
And then the suckers come, like, you know, yeah. whenever you have a stem and then you have a leaf, yeah. it comes with the sucker.
Yeah.
And then you have to snip it off because if you keep it on, then it becomes, it's another main stem. Then you will have 5 or 2.
Oh my gosh.
So I kept doing that and I kept giving our friends tomato plants.
Yeah.
I said, do you want tomato plants? It's really delicious tomato.
Yeah.
And we had so many. And when it reached the ceiling, finally I will cut down the whole thing and keep the main stems and root it again in water. And then basically I keep going through the cycle of that plant.
Oh, like if it once it reaches the top, you just like strip it down. Yeah. And it just doesn't.
I just, yeah, I snip off the top part and then that becomes a new plant.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, at one point, like the living room, like if you look at the living room, a quarter of it was that tomato plant.
Yeah. That's like a Christmas tree.
And you look at... You look at people's living room, like they have nice plants, like the fig tree,
yeah.
or maybe the avocado, whatever, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. or nice indoor plants, ZZ plants.
Here's the tomatoes.
Yep.
Do you still have the tomato plant?
No, we finally let go. At one point, I thought that was too crazy. Because, you know, it's huge. And I had to buy all these bamboo sticks to, you know,
keep make it stand kind of like a cone. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will share this with you, though. I still have this plant. And it was my biggest project during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted a strawberry plant.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find one.
Oh.
And I also thought that since we're in pandemic, I want to see how strong life could be.
Oh.
So I went to the grocery store in Boston. We have this place called Italy. I don't know if you know this place. Like, it's like Eat.
Okay.
But Italy.
Okay.
It's an Italian kind of food store that has restaurants and groceries and all of that.
Okay.
So I went to the grocery part and I spent, I think, $15 buying this box of strawberry.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's not the cheapest strawberry, you know?
No.
And it smells so good. And I was like, I really need this strawberry in my life right now. You know? So I bought that box. And then according to Ken, one day he woke up, the next day he woke up and he saw me like in living room, like with this paring knife and then very seriously staring at the strawberries and then peeling off the seed layer and then cutting the strawberry after I peel off the seeds to see if it's sweet. And if it's sweet, then I will keep the seeds on one side. And if it's not sweet, then I eat the outside layer that I've already cut. He was like, that was insane. Then once I have decided on the seeds from the strawberry that I consider was sweet, I actually then dry the outside layer and I use a tweezer to take out all the seeds on the strawberry.
Okay.
So, you know, like if you look at strawberry, that's like so many seeds.
So outside. Why don't you just plant the skins then?
Well, yeah, people say you can do that, but it's possible that the fruit part could rot. And I didn't want to risk that.
Okay.
Like if you plant it under the soil, like, you know, the skin technically also has the part of the strawberry that you eat, right? It has that fruit.
Right.
And then they say, well, maybe the success rate is not as high.
Okay.
You know? Apparently, it's really hard to grow strawberry from seeds.
Yeah.
Because strawberry plant actually produce similar thing like the tomato plant. They call the runner in this case. Mm-hmm. They produce multiple, the mother plant will produce multiple baby plants that you can easily propagate.
Yeah.
So not many people plant strawberry from seeds.
Right. But you tried.
I really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
So it was insane. I think I got like 100 seeds.
Wow.
And then I know it's almost impossible to make it happen. So I just dump all of that into soil. And at that time, I was doing a lot of these kind of experiments. So it's almost like whenever we get a container of yogurt or whatever, I was like, don't throw that out. That's going to be my next next container for the germination.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
And then at one point, Ken was telling me, he's like, I'm so scared. I'm not allowed to throw away anything. And like I was making my own fertilizer too, so like banana peels, eggshells,
so compost and stuff. Yeah.
And he was like, I'm not doing dishes. I'm gonna leave everything to you. Okay. Yeah, so I planted that seed, all those seeds, and then 2 months passed.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Ah.
But I still kept that there, and every day I'll water it, and I'll make sure to cover it with some sort of thing on top to keep the humidity.
Yeah. Do you know how long it takes for a straw? Okay, so
I had no idea.
You're kind of flying blindly then. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And then just, you know, one day, I think maybe the third month something, one day, this tiniest little sprout. It's so tiny. I mean, imagine the strawberry seed, one seed. Just this little green thing like showed up. I think I cried.
Can't imagine.
I remember it was like 7 a.m. and then I was like, hey! And then I remember like, look at this. And he was like, what? I was like, you see? He's like, no. It was so tiny. It was so tiny. It was so adorable.
Yeah.
And then now I have that. I still have that strawberry plant and we have eaten strawberries from that.
Wow. So it's even fruited.
Yeah.
Oh, like, how big are they?
In fact, like right now it has flowers. Like at this moment.
Oh, so do you try pollinating it or?
So I try. So apparently it's weird because yes, you have to do it. But then when I do too much, they die.
Oh.
So I have learned with my strawberry and I have to help pollinate it with a little bit, just like shake the flower because apparently they self-pollinate.
Oh, okay.
Or strawberry, I don't know.
Okay.
But I have this chili plant, we definitely have to do the pollinate job, like for us, like if we're bees, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise it doesn't work. Yeah, but I remember the first year we got one strawberry, just one.
Yeah.
And then Ken and I cut it into half. It was the tiniest. It was this kind of strawberry. It's kind of tiny.
Yeah.
So it was like the size of my thumb.
Right. Yeah.
We cut it into half. And then we each had half of the strawberry. And then I was like, what do you think? And I remember Ken said, well, it's strawberry.
Do you know how much time this took to produce this one strawberry?
Yeah. He's like, it's strawberry. And I was like, you're right. It is strawberry. I was like, Oh, so much care.
Yeah.
You're a very good mom. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. It's flowering now, but clearly you've produced more than one strawberry.
Yeah, we had another one. Actually, we had two earlier this year, and then somehow it's blooming again.
Yeah.
So right now there are two like strawberry like fruits that's growing bigger every day. And then there are two flowers actually as of today.
Oh, wow.
Two extra flowers, yeah.
Wow, that's so exciting. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
It's so pretty too, the flowers, so.
Yeah. So does the strawberry just, I mean, that plant just keeps growing and growing forever.
Yeah.
Even in like the winter time?
Yeah, because it's indoor.
Well, sure. I mean with like a limited light and slower. Stuff like that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so every plant is different. And apparently there are different species of strawberry, and some strawberries, like the edamame plant I had, every year you will die and it will come back.
Okay.
But the strawberry I have, they only produce apparently once a year, but then the plant itself will continue to grow. Mm-hmm. But they always say, oh, they suggest every 3 years you should propagate the runner, which I tried doing this year, mm-hmm. except in the winter we were away for a little bit, then when I came back, the runners died.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But I will do it again next year. They produce a lot. Like my strawberry, on average, produce 15 runners.
Wow. Okay.
So I can technically come up with 15 new strawberry plants.
Yeah. Can you mail runners or will it die?
Yeah. I think you can mail it once you have rooted it. And so what happened with the runner is that it comes with the plant, right? And then you will put this part in the soil. Bottom part of the runner, on the soil. You actually have to use like a paper clip to hold the runner down into the soil.
Okay.
You will start to root, and once it has mature enough, then you snip up the connection part to the mother plant, and then here you go. That's how people sell strawberry plants, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, clearly there's a lot of, you know, I can make the connection about the care that you put in all these things of the seeds and picking out the seeds of your strawberry, and I can make so many connections back to your love for teaching, because it's so similar to like learning all these fundamentals, and the details eventually over time will then sprout this, you know, little plant that will go on and then also propagate more, right? And also like sharing the propagating, like the feeders and stuff. Like, I don't know, there's so many like small little like
feel good connections. I did study a lot. I was really reading like other people's PhD research paper on edamame growing.
Oh, what? PhD papers?
Okay. Yeah, there are lots of people writing about, there are people who are very serious about how to grow this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was reading their paper. It was really cool, you know, how to think about the pH level of the soil and then how the direction of the sun and then all the humidity, and how do you water the edamame, what time of the day do you water, and what's the situation with the pest control and all that. Well, it's...
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure. I mean, but it's like kind of the more you know, right? Then the more you can...
Yeah.
Yeah. And your thumb is getting greener by the day.
You can definitely say that.
Yeah.
Also, if you want to link it to teaching, I actually think that part of me doing all these plans is just that I care a lot about what I do.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of scary because like I talk to my plants every day for an hour. And, you know, it's like, how much do you care? And then how much do you want them to become what you want them to become? Mm-hmm. So sometimes I try to tell myself, like, the whole situation with my plants taught me that I have to let go of something. Like, I cannot make my plant grow the way I want them to grow.
And
same thing, I cannot make my students become who I think they should become.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I get so upset if my students don't come to the lesson and I haven't practiced enough. Mm-hmm. Or I'm like, why don't you do this exercise I told you to do? Like, you have to do it, and then you will be, it's good for you, you know. Mm-hmm. And I have learned from the whole planting experience that sometimes things just don't work that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird that it took me to plant all these indoor, you know, food plants to realize this seemingly very simple and easy concept of teaching. But I tend to want to control a lot of things when I can. But, you know, I need to know that everybody learns differently. Every plant grows differently. Even the same strawberry plant in the same location every year is going to be different.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking back to our bonsai talk and how you're saying how much... So only a little bit is within control, but it's more about noticing the overall architecture of what the plant will grow into, right? So it's like very similar in perspective to how a teacher may approach a student.
I mean, the bonsai literally, you know, the artistry comes in your collaboration of the natural development, a natural shaping of the plant.
Right.
Yeah, you never interfere too much. You just guide it.
Right.
That's how they talk about it. Yeah. like, you guide it so it grows to this way.
But that's
you
like,
don't just cut it.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's how I feel like a lot of, I mean, some of the best teachers are guides. They're not, mm-hmm. yeah, like, kind yeah. of too in your face about things. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's very funny. I have this friend who's so in love with orchid growing. Mm. Like, she has this room, like, dedicated to all her orchids.
Wow.
And she bought all this light and all of that. Mm-hmm. And even a humidifier for
the orchids.
And then she visited us once, and then I had this orchid plant, and I was asking her, I was like, you know, I want to know if you think my orchid plant is happy. Can you take a look at my orchid? And she saw my orchid, and you know, she looked at it, but she picked it up and she smelled my orchid, and she said, your orchid is happy.
Oh.
I said, how can you tell from smelling my orchid,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
She's like, I can tell. There's like this very specific, you know, scent.
Oh.
You will smell from the medium. It's not the soil that you use, but it's like moss or
uh-huh.
barks that you use.
Yeah.
And she said they produce this very specific scent mm. when they're happy.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah. And now I actually know what she's talking about. Oh. And I can smell it. It's very strong.
Oh, okay.
And so when I go to my friend's house, I see orchid. I was like, your orchid's not very happy.
Oh.
Like, yeah, how do you know it? I was like, yeah, it doesn't have that smell.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny. A totally different story.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, people know like how to understand their plants, you know?
Yeah.
This is a living thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. What's next, I guess, if you have time or space.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess what's next is probably not in this current apartment. It's mm-hmm. just we have such limited space. But, we, you know, we've been thinking about moving mm-hmm. one day, maybe this year or next year, to a bigger space. And yeah. when we do that, we have decided that we're going to plant apple and peach tree.
Whoa!
In the backyard.
Oh, that'd
yeah,
be
so
great.
We're going full on bigger.
Yeah.
Bigger.
Like, yeah. A, like a yard bigger.
Mm-hmm. And then we will have our vegetable garden. Like, for me, I really want to grow my own vegetable.
Yeah.
And then fruit tree, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually want to have grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll work, but I will love that.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, maybe some lavender. Yeah, I like herbs, but, you know, I love verbena. I love mm-hmm. lavender and, mm-hmm. and mint, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still buying plants. It's terrible. But, you know, I have, like, succulent. Right now, I go, like, with small. And then last year, Ken let me buy 3 succulents. So I bought some.
He let you.
It was very nice. Actually, after I got my first vaccine, I was so scared that I was going to be in bed for days. So right after I got my first shot of vaccine, we went to a plant shop that I have been wanting to go to.
Mm.
And then we bought planters and different plants. And came home. And I was like, this is very nice. I got my first vaccine shot and then I was allowed to buy 2 plants. Yeah, we bought this plant that's beautiful called the Fittonia. I don't know if you know this Mm-mm. plant, but the plant itself is fuzzy, which is really funny.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So a lot of my students will come to have lessons and they will say, this plant is so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's very nice. And then that plant totally outgrown. Yeah, that one. So funny.
Oh, wow.
It's very hairy. I'm trying to propagate it from cuttings.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I put in water, you'll see all this hair
uh-huh.
around the stem.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah, yeah. I feel it's like cute. I gotta buy a place in Boston. And then mm. just like anytime you have want to propagate just, anything, I'll just start having another.
Yeah, I mean, that's like literally what happened with tomato plant. I think yeah. maybe one of my friends still has the tomato
oh,
plant.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have a few friends who are like me. Like, I gave them 1 tomato plant, and then before you knew it, they had like 5
yeah,
tomato
yeah, yeah.
plants.
Oh, oh, I mean, that's where I'm like, I would be yeah. totally on board doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but if you think about it, it's kind of crazy how many seeds we eat in our life.
Mm.
You know, when you get a bell pepper,
yeah.
inside that's all seeds, and
yeah.
each one of those seeds can potentially become another plant.
Yeah, totally. That, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, and then we were, you know, at one point we were eating, we're just, should we be keeping all these seeds?
Ken's like, no, no.
Well, he was actually the one who asked
oh,
me the question.
Oh, okay, okay.
Because we were eating and he thought, wait, hold on, you... Because I also did that to chili plants. I uh-huh. also grew my own chili plant
oh,
from
great.
Seeds.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted a very spicy one, so mm-hmm. I was doing the thing where I actually tasted the chili. So they say even the same type, it's not the same spice level.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were doing that with the Thai chili.
Oh, okay.
And then there was like, one was so spicy, I kept all the seeds.
Yeah.
And then, you know, did all the thing. And then we were eating bell pepper, and he said, it's kind of wasteful for you to throw away all these seeds if you can potentially grow them into
yeah. Well, maybe it was, well... Yeah.
And I say, now you want to start this?
Yeah.
Like, no, one in a family is enough. Yeah. It's really funny.
Yeah.
I think for me, part of it is to see the cycle of life, the circle of life, you know, because you really can grow. It's almost like it's impossible to not be able to grow your own food if you're really stuck at a place.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I mean, obviously you need soil, you will need fertilizer, you need compost, whatever, but it's just amazing. Like the food we eat every day, they can potentially produce more food for the world.
Yeah.
And then if we have that concept, maybe we won't produce so much waste or whatever that goes into nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Be more mindful with how things are grown. You know, like when we're eating that strawberry, when we share that little tiny strawberry I planted, I thought, if only we actually thought about every single bite of food that we eat in this way.
Mm.
Like somebody actually grows this for you. It's not just like you buy a box of strawberry and you eat and then you kind of throw away whatever that's close to the top.
Yeah. The leaf.
Yeah.
Part,
like when you grow your own strawberry, you really think about how much it takes to produce that one strawberry.
Yeah.
And you actually eat it with care and you try to really taste it.
That's profound. Yeah. I mean, definitely would eliminate a lot of waste, as you were mentioning. Food waste, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you go to supermarket and you think about all those produce, you know, you see there. Maybe it's too much. Maybe we really need to find a better way to have better balance.
Mm-hmm.
How much food that's being grown and how they're being grown and versus how much food we're actually consuming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard, right? Definitely, because people need to make profit from these things.
Yep.
But at the same time, is it good for the environment?
Right. That's a really good question.
Yeah, maybe we'll have our own chicken coop one day. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past you guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you talk to your chickens in the morning. It'd be fun.
Oh my God. Yeah, Lucy, Patty.
Hey!
Patty, why don't you run more? Patty, you want to go and walk with me? Go, 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 go.
Oh, dear. I'd be honored to be named a chicken after a chicken, though.
I'm sure the chicken will have name tag.
A name tag. Well, Li Mei, thank you so much for sharing your green thumb and your fascination for indoor planting. I've learned so much just from talking to you about that. May I ask you two final questions?
Okay.
What is one piece of advice you would tell your younger self about entering and pursuing a music career?
Don't complain so much. Just do what you need to do. And know that, you know, everybody is special. You don't have to compare yourself to others so much.
Yeah.
Just focus on what you really want to get. Don't think so much. Everybody has different goals and find what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was younger, everybody, you think about others, you care about what other people think about you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get distracted with your direction. Especially if you want to be an artist, you really need to just focus on what you want. Mm-hmm. And then
things will come your way. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Or you pursue that, but don't try to do all the things people want you to do. Like, for example, if somebody say, oh, I think you don't play with enough vibrato, you play with lots of vibrato, even if when you don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just a lot of that. But find out what it is that matters to you and really polish it.
Okay. And as we enter a, I don't know, seemingly post-pandemic world, what elements of your musical pandemic life would you want to continue and what would you want to shed?
Well, during the pandemic, I practiced a lot.
Mm.
And then probably because all the concerts were canceled, I felt that I was allowing myself to be creative in my practice sessions instead of always feeling like I must meet the deadline.
Yeah,
and then
or pragmatic about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would love to really encourage myself to continue with that approach in my practice and then know that everything's for long term. I don't have to always feel like I must be perfect in the notes that I have to play and just allow myself to really take time to process and to think about every single detail that I'm performing. And honestly, things I want to not continue. I actually don't know. I actually really had a good life during pandemic outside my work.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was actually having a difficult time before pandemic. So that's why the pandemic allowed me to really have time to think about everything.
Okay.
So maybe just the only thing is maybe don't be too crazy about your plan. Don't talk to your plan so much. It was really so much. You had no idea.
Well, I mean, again, there's no guilt about anything that happened during the pandemic. So, yeah. But then you learned a lot about plants then. So, you know, now you know.
But that's actually, that's really a thing I really should try not to do. It's like when I get into a new thing, I get too intense about
it. Oh, okay.
You know, I was studying about this PhD research paper I talked to you about mm-hmm. until 4 a.m. one day.
Uh-huh.
I woke up at 7 a.m. to try out all the things I saw in the paper.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Not worth it. It was too much.
Okay.
You know?
Well, I know. Yeah, you get excited about it. But anyway, I get you though. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any platforms or websites for our listeners to learn more about you or any upcoming projects?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a website, which I try to update things there, mm-hmm. but it's just limeliang.com, so mm-hmm. it's easy.
Yeah.
I'm not the most active person on social media, mm-hmm. but of course, people can follow me. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your review will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make Sushi's day. And it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become part of the Hidden Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/HiddenMusicStand. Our social media handle for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is at HiddenMusicStand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, HiddenMusicStand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize the piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. The link is in the description of each episode. Li Mei, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. It is so wonderful to see you again and to catch up.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
I'm so terrible at like podcasts and interviews.
Oh my gosh, you did so well. No, it was wonderful. And thanks for listening. Sushi, say bye.
No. I remember we both went to the festival without a car. Mm. And then so we were very stuck in that little town, which was really lovely. But I remember at night we would love to go to a bar and there was literally one option and they would close at 10 p.m.
That's true. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And remember what you did? I remember what you did.
What did I do? I don't.
You were very clever. You were making gin martini from the cafeteria coffee cup.
Oh.
You were using the lid as a, like, you were using the whole coffee setup as a shaker.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then you will mix it and then you will pour it out from the, you know, the lid of the coffee. Uh-huh. And then that will stop the ice.
Oh,
you didn't remember that? I thought.
There's two way gin martini Benson.
No, I remember you did that like the first few days and I thought, oh, wow, Patty is so smart. Oh,
thank you.
My cellist is so smart. That's what I thought.
Or just really needs a gin martini.
Yeah, or sense that somebody around you needed.
Yeah, or maybe that. Yeah, all of us needed. No, it's funny.
Yeah,
no, I forgot about that. Well, good to know that I was once crafty.
Yeah.